it. And I think I just answered the phone, and that's probably Ezekiel there. Is that right?
You got it.
Okay, so you're on. Take it away and call out for me when you want me to come back.
Okay, it's going to be just about, I don't know, 5 minutes.
That's all. I'll sit right here. I won't go outside.
All right. This is from my growing collection that I call Parables for the 21st Century. It's the very first one I wrote, the idea came to me in 1988. The idea of the 21st century was still, you know, a little far off, so I thought it was cool, but now we're well into it. So here's the story. The little angel who wouldn't fly. In the first year of the return of our Lord, there was a little angel who wouldn't fly. Not that he didn't have wings, nor was he damaged in any way. He just wouldn't fly. And this was a mystery to all the other angels who did, and looked below and saw the little angel like a mite moving across the brown and green face of earth. I must regress here for a moment, for my story comes from the future, addressed to you who are indeed one of the angels in my tale, as we all will be in a time very close to your own. Indeed, most of you will not shed your present forms before witnessing the evolutionary rapture, but will instead regenerate your deoxyribonucleic acids to form new and youthful bodies. Anyway, from time to time, a curious brother or sister from above would pay this little angel a brief visit to walk beside him and ask the obvious question, "Little angel, why don't you ever fly?" And a shadow would cross the brow of the little angel as he puffed up his chest and replied, "In memory of man, before he earned his wings, I walk the earth for all eternity." Then he'd pause, and a certain weariness would shake his frame as he lowered his head. "And because I am waiting." The visiting angel would then lean closer and ask, quite dumbfounded, "Waiting for what, little angel? There is nothing left to wait for." The little angel would then raise his head and look straight into the visitor's eyes. "I am waiting for a tall, handsome angel to take me in his arms and fly away with me." After the little angel gave this two-part reply, which was always the same, the visiting angel would shrug its wings and take flight. One day, while the little angel was window shopping, a pair of wings on a rack at J.C. Penney's caught his eye. He came in and caressed it, admiring the downy texture and soft opal hues. Best of all, it would not shrink and was machine washable. The little angel hated doing laundry, which is only second on a shit list to a visit to purgatory. "May I help you?" A salesman courteously addressed the little angel, who gasped at this breathing creation of bronze muscled flesh and jet black hair. His green eyes flashed as the little angel admired those tight, full buttocks, from which extended a sinewy tail that promised of anal delights beyond the little angel's wildest dreams. A lump swelled in the salesman's crotch and began to burst the seams of his fly. "He's a real devil," thought the little angel. He almost caressed the salesman's thighs, but withdrew his hand and sighed. "I was admiring this pair of wings," said the little angel. "May I try them on?" "Certainly," said the salesman. "There's an empty booth over there." As the little angel walked away, the salesman's heart melted. A son like him would make me the proudest father in Galactic Sector 357. How sad that he is not yet loved. The little angel emerged from the dressing booth with a new pair of wings inserted into the slots between his shoulder blades. He tossed his old wings into the molecularizer. "They're on backwards," said the salesman. "Here, let me help you." The little angel shuddered in ecstasy as the salesman's warm hands touched his shoulders with a gentle caress and lingered. He felt some fingers slip into the rear pocket of his pants, inserting a piece of paper with a televideo number. He almost threw himself into the salesman's arms. Oh, how I could love this man. He would be a wonderful father, thought the little angel. And in the telepathic union of their two minds, he pictured himself with the naked embrace of the salesman, Cal wrapped around the little angel and beginning to enter his anus with increasingly eager prods. But he's not the one. Who is the one? The little angel put a stop to these delicious thoughts, paid for the wings, and walked out. The sun was intense as the little angel crossed the mall to enter the Santa Cruz bookstore. As he sought a cloud across the sky to shield his eyes, a centaur almost ran over him. Oh, excuse me, little guy, said the centaur. I should have been watching where I was going. The little angel admired the centaur's muscular torso as he reared back and stamped his hooves with delight. Say, you're a cute little fellow. How about a ride? The little angel tried to climb up, but kept slipping. Say, aren't you used to those wings yet? Here, let me help you up. And the centaur tenderly lifted him in his arms to set the little angel on his back. The summer breeze tingled the little angel's face as they raced down Pacific Avenue to the ocean, where they sat and talked a spell. Seals cavorted in the backwater beneath the piers, and pelicans gathered around the centaur and the little angel as if in serious contemplation of their conversation. The little angel removed his shirt and dazzled the centaur with the physical perfection of a 16-year-old boy. His tiny nipples stood erect in the ocean mist, and a halo of light played around his auburn hair. His eyes sparkled like cracked ice in champagne, and the muscles on his ribs and arms were only beginning to bud. The little angel smiled. The centaur suddenly bowed his head and covered his eyes, and the pelicans averted their glance for a moment. Is the sun in your eyes? Asked the little angel, who sat closer to the centaur in order to block the intense rays. The centaur looked up and gently kissed the little angel. They sat for a while in silence. The waves crashed on the hot sand, and the sea foam hissed. Each was in his own thoughts, yet their eyes did not leave each other, and thus many thoughts were shared. The end.
Oh, that was sweet and
and weird.
not that weird, not compared to some of the other things that I've been reading lately. I
well,
like the
no,
part about
no.
the cavorting. The seals cavorted. I never think of them cavorting, but I suppose they do. And weasels and otters and so on cavort and frolic.
Yes. Well, I thought it was, for me, it was a fun play between the forbidden erotic, you know, for a homophobic society, and yet it's a very natural feeling. And then to, I sort of clashed it with a very romantic, you know, loving notion. And so some people think it's very maudlin, some people think it's yucky, and some people just love it or whatever. But I just, you know, I just go with the flow as I write, and a lot of, you know, very archetypal. Almost everything I write is a Jungian-style archetypal, very big influence in my life. There.
When did you write that?
1988.
Are you writing as much as you used to now?
Well, I take big breaks in between. So I have to say yes and no. I have a lot of ideas to write and so forth, but then my real life situations cause disruptions, which make it hard for me to focus. And so I'm writing less now than I was a few months back, but that doesn't mean anything.
When you say your real life situation, does that mean you're in danger of not being able to stay in the place where you're staying?
Not that bad. No, it's just the I don't know. It's just the horrible world we live in and how it imposes upon me. Since I'm, you know, very low income, and I don't really have good medical care, and I have homeless friends that, you know, feel bad about it. It's hard to stay positive, and horrible news, you know, and so forth. That, you know, I don't have a sanctuary to go to and meditate and think and do my writing. So, and then the street noise and the craziness that goes on, it's very difficult to sit and focus and write.
Is there a library near where you live?
Libraries are bad places to go to. You get these street bums staring at you, and if you look the other way, For a moment, they'll swipe your laptop or tablet, cell phone, whatever you have.
Really? The library in San Francisco isn't a, you don't think of it as a safe place?
Oh, God, no. And you don't dare want to use the restroom. You have all these ex-cons going in there showering and shaving and stuff, and they're quite scary people. It's pretty awful here in San Francisco. I don't see why the city has let it get this bad.
Oh, no. Okay, well, I don't remember going to the library in San Francisco in the last 10 years, so I wouldn't know about that.
I stopped going a little over 10 years ago. Just too crazy, scary. What really annoys me is that the social workers for the homeless decided to make the main library the gathering place for them to help them connect and all that stuff.
And use the computers.
And connect with other services. I thought, how dare they do that? If I had a kid, I wouldn't take a kid to there anymore. It's really bad. They've had breakouts, stabbings. The restroom's all messed up.
Where else can they go?
Well, that's true, too. But since they made it official centers, it's sort of, well, where are the children going to go now? For libraries and stuff. I wouldn't bring a kid there.
Are there more than one big library in San Francisco, or are there like...
There's local libraries here and there, and I try to go to some. But, I went to the Inner Sunset, which is called, a big chunk of it's called the New Chinatown. It's been called that for over 40 years. So I want to get away from this stuff. I want to go to coffee houses. Some crazies are going to come in and disrupt everything. And, maybe I'll try the library. I go there, and there's this white guy, tall, skinny white guy, scrubby beard, scary looking, had this glare in his eyes like Charles Manson, looking around with a big grin on his teeth. Very frightening, like he's ready to bite anyone's head off. It was like, oh my God, it's like, and everyone's reading the books, chatting and smiling, whatever, being reasonably quiet, as if nothing's going on. Then there's this guy staring around with this crazy look in his eyes. I can't sit and think. I thought, oh my God, even here, you can't get away from it, And then the coffee house, the Chinese coffee house I go into, I thought I'd get away from it there too in different neighborhoods. No, I get a few very scary people come in there, and they don't say, we don't serve you. I wouldn't serve them. I mean, frightening. They're talking to themselves, looking and staring. I've had problems settling in coffee houses to get on Wi-Fi. About 6 years back, I was going to one in the Embarcadero, which is a nice area by the water, but every so often some crazy would come in, and there were no guards to chase them out. They'd have to phone and wait. And then one day, what drove me out, and they're nice people who work there, but they can't do much. I was sitting there, so I looked up, and there was this crazy guy staring right at me. Crazy, it was a white guy, grinning and sort of giggling and staring right at me. So I pretended I didn't notice, went back on my laptop. I look up a minute later, and there he is sitting right across from me, staring right at me, giggling even louder. And I'm stuck against the wall, the side of the table against the wall. And the only way I can get out was getting closer to him before I got through there. And the other people working there, they were standing kind of scared in the back, behind the counters, watching. Obviously, we're waiting for a guard to come. So I surreptitiously got out my pepper spray and looked like it was time for, acted like it was time for me to leave again. And I stepped, gradually edged out. And I told him right before I slipped away, I said, I'm sorry, you nice people, but I can't come back again. Because it's one of those ground-level things where it's real easy for some bum to come in. And then they have to wait for the guard or whatever. So then I found another car. I was a couple blocks away. I was going there for a few months. But then there was a siren. This alarm would go off every now and then, like every 2 weeks for about 5 minutes. This is an emergency, everybody gets to get... So it turns out, it's the hotel above it. This alarm goes on, and even though it's a coffee house, not really part of the hotel, the alarm goes on, and they don't even say this is a test, which it is, and it's really loud. So the last straw was one day, and it goes on, and goes on for more than 10 minutes, it's still going on. And everyone else is sitting there like nothing unusual is happening. It's like this horrible, loud, screechy alarm. It's nuts. I said, I don't want to come here if it means punishment. So I tell the people, I yell at them. I said, this is insane. I'm not coming back. And I go, And then, you know, this Chinese place, Chinese neighborhood, I thought I could get away from some of this craziness. But then, wow, it's something else. It's pretty bad. I'm not going to sit in a library anywhere else with some crazy person.
Okay,
you know,
well,
very scary acting and looking. And I'm not going to pretend it's not happening.
Okay, I didn't. I wasn't aware of any of that.
My God, people don't know. You get come down to San Francisco some afternoon, stroll around the financial district. You see what's going on.
The financial district.
Huh?
The financial district you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. You just can't get away from it unless you live in the really wealthy neighborhoods. but the Castro is inundated with homeless. It's nonstop. And some of these people are very scary. There was another coffee house I went to before I discovered the one in the new Chinatown. And after, you know, when I had to get away from the one in the Embarcadero and the other one with the lawn drove me out. This one's around Fifth Avenue in Irving. It's a nice little coffee house, ground level. And this is a homeless person always sitting out front. There's three tables up front, so no one sits out front. The guy smells, and he's filthy, and he looks kind of crazy. And once in a while, he'll come in. I look up, suddenly he's just staring at me on my laptop. I thought, oh, please, you know. But some cops come in there from coffee, and so that helps. One day I was sitting there, and this guy came in, started knocking things over and screaming, and fortunately some cops just pulled up, and they got him out. Well, this is a guy who's been a problem in the Castro for quite a few years, and before that, south of Market, where I used to hang out, that's where I met Larkin, go to Hole in the Wall. One day he was strutting up and down in front of our bar, wielding a butcher knife. And he was driven out. The guy's crazy. So I finally, you know, when I got away from south of Market, you know, I thought I'd never see him again. A few years later, he shows up in the castle. He's been here for like more than 5 years now. And then some other crazy guy, big dude, 6'6", is a black dude. Very, very scary. He used to be down there, too, and now he's up here. It's like I'm being followed. You know, it's terrible. Now, one of that big black dude, he was stalking me for a few months. Somehow figured out my route out of the Castro to the inner sunset. He'd show up and be grinning at me from halfway down, grinning. I'd get off and get right on the car in front or back or just wait till the next one. Oh, no, this is people are acting like this isn't happening here in the city. It's just stuff I see. And you know, all these people are suffering, in great suffering, the ones who aren't crazy on the streets. So it's suffering to be on the streets, and it's terrible. No, absolutely wackadoodle, absolutely nuts. But, you know, I'm not blaming San Francisco. It's all over the country in one form or another. So did that GOP bill, did that horrendous GOP health bill pass for sure or what?
Not the health bill, but the budget tax bill.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it passed.
They're slamming us. They're slamming this whole country. It's like the moment you turn your head, something else horrible happens. Bang, bang, bang. It's like, is this really real? What's going on here? You know, and the same thing with gay people and blacks and so forth. It's like, wow, one thing after another. How wicked, absolutely wicked, you know. And what gets me is, you know, I walk around all the city in here, and I see all these people going back and forth from work, financial district, other places, all happy and everything. I say, how can they be so happy? What the hell's going on? What's wrong with them? I'm not jealous of them for being happy, maybe a little bit, but they don't seem to be connected with what's going on or involved even a little bit with doing something to help better this country. It's like they're giddy, they're silly. And here in the Castro, people, you know, act silly and goofy. I mean, it's okay once in a while, but it's all the time like, what a wonderful world. Oh, this is great. Nothing. Are you kidding me? And they're walking right by these people who have serious diseases and are mentally ill sitting on the streets like, what the fuck is going on, you know? What the fuck?
Well, it seems to me like you're describing a science fiction story, future dystopian hellscape.
Yes, I know. Well, yeah, it's absolutely horrendous. Well, not that there aren't some good things going on. I recognize that, but But someone who's on a low income and sort of an outsider and eccentric by nature, I'm exposed to it much more. But it's all around us in this city. It's so obvious. I mean, this is just...
This kind of subtly explains why you're involved in, like, the discussion listserv on MCN, because it's not where you are.
Yeah.
I mean, it must feel like a place where you're not being, well, on the other hand, I mean, look at what's happening
on
there.
On the other hand, yes.
It's just as... But it's removed in place, if not in time,
like,
and so
it.
You're safe. You can feel safe.
Well, yeah, but it's cyberspace. It's not real space. But it's a nice break. It's another reality. The Mendocino is a great county or whatever, and you can have conversations that are more intimate as opposed to Facebook or other big groups and so forth.
One of these days, I'm going to have to reactivate my Facebook business and learn how to use it and everything. But so far, it's just. It's kind of like everybody has a different kind of art that they like to do, and you can't really convince somebody who likes to do one kind of art to do another kind, because that's not their art. And I'm not sure what my art is, but I'm only capable of paying attention to the things that I want to pay attention to, and none of that is Facebook or Twitter.
Well, I don't even bother with Facebook. I hardly do anything on it. I got on it begrudgingly because the publishing company made that as a suggestion to get known for my writing. You know, get on there and Twitter.
Oh, speaking of which, yeah, did you send away for Chip Chip Cha from Alex Bosworth?
Not yet.
Well, I think you're going to get a kick out of that book.
Yeah, I have the money to get it. I just had to wait till my Social Security amount came in.
I was looking
to make sure
for
I had enough money.
I was looking for his $22. I didn't realize
it's only 80 pages. It's $22.
I didn't realize it was that much.
And then they don't have a ebook option or other stuff like that.
Look for Alex Bosworth's work on. His YouTube channel used to be called Chalkner, C-H-O-C-K-N-E-R.
C-H-O-C-K-N-E-R, okay.
Yeah, and it was kind of like a funny way of saying a combination of Chaucer and Faulkner.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
And I think you might find, I was looking the other day, it used to be, not too long ago, you could look up Alex Bosworth and you'd get two results. One of them was a female blues singer in Louisiana. And the other one was Alex Bosworth that we know and love, and his work. And you would find dozens of things on YouTube. I'm trying to think of the name of his product, Crayon Productions. You might find something looking up that. But he would all the stories that he used to send to my newspaper in the early 1990s. He read aloud into a VHS editing deck and then used turning the camera on and off to sort of blockily animate crayon drawings of what he's talking about on butcher paper. And they're just beautiful, beautiful, weird things, you know, that like a child story, except, you know, dark stories. And the sound of his voice, you know, before he had all the trouble in his life that he's had since then, he sounds high-pitched and excited and happy, and it's it's a little different. He sounds better now than he did.
Great. Well, but I wouldn't. The problems he's had, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
God damn, the things that he had to go through.
Well, so last week when he called in, he described his stay over at the psychiatric clinic, and some of these people had, the thousand-yard stare or whatever it's called?
Yeah.
Okay, well, and you're right. His sense of humor has kept him alive, because, my God, that's putting most of the patients in danger, letting them hang out with potentially violent patients. That's absolutely insane. And if I had to go to a psychiatric clinic and see that, I would be totally freaked out. That would not heal me or help me in any way.
Well, the thing is, he lived through all this other stuff, you know. It's a little bit of thousand-yard stare isn't going to hurt him now, I think.
Oh, but, you know... you can make fun of that, but these people, these are violent people usually, and to put other patients.
You know what? The only scary situations I had in my life with people that anybody would describe as crazy people were just, you know, few and far between. I picked up a hitchhiker once about 10 years ago, and the worst night of my life.
Oh my God.
And if that's the worst night of my life, when I tell you the story, it sounds funny. It's like listening to Alex Bosworth tell you a funny story.
Well,
it sounds funny, but I have had no problems even approaching the magnitude and just bad feeling involved and terrible are you still there? Unfixable things like your teeth, you know, that
I know.
Maybe my teeth will be bad like that soon. I mean, I'm not getting any younger, but you and Alex and a bunch of people that I know, you people have been through hell, and I don't know how to help you.
And it still goes on. It's like, for me, it's like, all right, I have no friends. I'm going to talk to Fuhrers. I have some kind of fringes going on, but they're homeless and they got problems. You don't even know what from day to the next whether they're going to be dead or whatever. And you don't have a place to hang out or whatever. I can't get them to sit down and even have a cup of coffee and talk. That's out of their range or something, you know, and so forth. And then Trump on top of all this other stuff, the bad teeth. People not understanding where I'm coming from, or people hollering at me. Oh, yes, you can get your teeth taken care of. There are free services. We don't have them.
I'm understanding that that's not as easy as the people who don't have that problem think it is.
I know. Well, it's brutal. It's brutal, and it's like I don't want to wake up every morning. I've been like this for years. I really don't. It's so. I really don't want to wake up. I really don't want to see another day. And it's a horrible way to live, and I do my best to have a positive attitude and so forth. And when a little something good happens to me to cheer me up, these awful things start happening again. It's just absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. I read about these other people who've done good things and live these great lives and suffered, and then they get up and stuff. I said, I've tried to do the same thing they do, and it hasn't worked for me. Well, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong. It's just it's like the world is sadistic to me, or people like me, and once it just grinded in my face over and over again since the day I was born. You know, I was treated like a weirdo, crazy. You're crazy. You know, you're just weird. My parents would tell me that. My brother would. Oh, it's like, what the heck is going on? I don't take any of it seriously. But it is a hard thing to live with, that it goes on and on and on.
When you get off the phone with me after we've been talking like this, do you feel better or worse?
Better.
Okay, well then that's great.
I don't,
fine.
Talk therapy is often better than drug therapy and stuff, and I had talk therapy for years, and that all ended. I lost the last good psychiatrist I had about 20 years ago, and I tried to find another one, but no one would take me at that point unless I took a psychiatric type of medicine for even see them as a requirement. I'm not going to be a victim of the pharmaceutical industry. You know, they eliminated talk therapy and just drugs, and then you didn't get to see a shrink once a week like it used to be on Medi-Cal. Only once a month. I said, please. You know, this is just cold-hearted crap. And the last psychiatrist I checked in on to see, there was a woman, young woman, tall, lanky, long, dishwater blonde hair. I said, do I have to take some drugs to see you? She goes, yep. And I said, let me think about it. I looked up different drugs, well, to you then, whatever.
Hold on. Let me ask you. You went to see a new psychiatrist because they let you to see a psychiatrist, and you're talking to her, and before she even examined you, she told you that you would have to take drugs if you came to see her.
It's mandatory. If you're on Medi-Cal and
how did she even know what drugs you would need?
They don't. That's just it. It's a scam. How can I put my trust in that type of medical
system? Well, you can't, I guess. I couldn't.
You can't, exactly. So when I saw it, and she was like this stone-faced lady, I said, oh, my God. And then, so I said, I don't think I can see you because I don't believe in this stuff. Well, they don't really do talk therapy. They just collect their income, you know, and then pharmaceuticals get their fortune while we are subjected to these horrible drugs. And then when she's rich enough, she'll go into private service on the backs of all us poor. You know, I know what's going on, but as an eccentric type and creative type, I'm considered crazy and all this BS. And just having my teeth bad like this is very humiliating, and it's like it just stereotypes me further as a loser and outsider. But this gives me a heart for others who are worse off than I am. But I take the Buddhist stance of this. We have no enemies, only teachers. And this is, it makes no sense. I don't buy it that I've been treated like this since I was a kid, and it has never stopped. Now, with occasional exceptions like you and Eleanor and a rare person I meet who just thinks I'm great and really nice person, but no, they can't stay in the city too long. They got to move. They can't afford it. Every so often, I will meet a really nice person to get along with. Though it's getting, you know, rarer and rarer. So I this is my path. This is my dharma. Well, some people it's cancer. Some people it's some other tragedy. Some people it's loneliness, like me, and some other things, whatever. I don't take it seriously. I don't believe it. It makes no sense that I should be treated like this so long all my life, except that this is my particular path, what I have to learn to go. People, everybody suffers one way or another. Every so often, it's tempting to get angry at these people walking around being happy and they got all this money and they can afford this and that. I can't afford squat.
I think it's perfectly reasonable to resent people who have something that you can never have and who don't seem to appreciate it.
Yeah, but I don't resent you because you are not an asshole, even though you're financially fortunate. You're not an asshole. You reach out and do what you can for others. And that's the important thing.
I'm financially fortunate. I have a roof over my head.
Yeah. But there's no point in constantly focus on that. But of course, it's normal to feel that way now and then. It's okay, but I don't like to.
I'm trying to say this so that I don't hurt your feelings, but I can't think of anything else to say but the truth, and I'm getting a little tired of talking on the phone now, and I have to go back.
No, I know what you mean. I get tired of holding. I'm normally not a long phone talker either.
Yeah, so if I don't go back to my show, I'm going to get too sleepy to do it right, and so I'm going to have to say goodbye to you now.
No, that's fine. I appreciate that you called.
I want you to.
I look forward to tomorrow's podcast.
Yeah, sure. It'll be. Wait until tomorrow night because I'm probably going to sleep all day before I upload that. I can't think of anything else. I can't give you any advice because I'm completely outside of the experience that you're having. I don't know what to do. I don't know how I would live if I were you.
Yeah, I know, and probably gonna. I don't know how much longer I'll survive with all the cutbacks with Trump. And, you know, I'm just living on a wing and a prayer. I don't know how long I'll be able to stay in this building, what's going to happen.
Is your place rent controlled? Do you have to?
I'm on rent control, yeah. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
All right. Well, then that's the place to start from, I guess. You do have a roof over your head, so at least that's not going away anytime soon.
Well, it could. You never know. When I've been here so long. It's like it's unimaginable, and you know they haven't sold it or anything, and got to move people out, and they've been weakening rent control every year. So
Okay, well,
and I have no family to go back to.
I don't believe in well wishing or prayer as having any use at all. But if I did, I would say good luck to you, and God bless you.
Yeah, thank you.
Goodbye. Write another story and send it to me, and I'll read it next week on the air.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.